Prime Day is coming July 16th and 17th, with epic deals exclusively for Prime members. You'll feel like you just won an award.
Oh, wow, I didn't even prepare a speech. I'd like to thank my family for always needing stuff. Also, Sam, my delivery guy, for bringing all my awesome deals so fast. You're the man, Sam!
Shop deals on electronics, home, and more this Prime Day, July 16th and 17th.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that thought the term was quiet as a mouse, not a cat. It's SIFPA. Welcome to SIFPOP Weekly, streaming live most Fridays. We're available to download later in your podcast feed. Unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Woo.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he just wants to spend some time with someone who's tall and will say some things he doesn't already know. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy.
Each week, we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. How you doing, Mr. Andrew?
Long time no see, Mr. Dicer.
You know, it's been at least an hour.
At least an hour, yeah. Too long. I missed you.
Yeah, no, we are in the unique position, this doesn't happen all the time, of both having just walked out of, basically, Horizon, you know, just a little bit ago. Chapter one. Sorry, Horizon, : An American Saga, - Chapter one.
Yeah.
And so we will have some very fresh thoughts on that. And then, of course, we also both got a chance to see A Quiet Place day one. So we'll talk a little bit about that, too. And best ever challenge today, best ever one movies.
Yes.
So movies with the word or number one in them. So we'll see how far Andrew wants to stretch that category.
Not at all, actually. I was very good.
I don't know if what I did could be considered stretching or not. We'll see. We'll see when we get there. And of course, some buried treasure as well. Let's do our quick weekly check-in on the Summer Sum Game, shall we? We will open up SIFPOP.com. We will click on Summer Sum Challenge. The beautiful purple page will load up in front of our eyes, and we will see where we stand. One of my favorite things on the Summer Sum Game website is the chart that shows the the way the movies have made
the revenue.
The revenue of the movies. And it's like all these movies, and then Inside Out is just like a straight line up into the air for 3 weeks. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, I wish I bought stock in Inside Out too, because I would be sitting pretty right now.
So $400 million before we get to the weekend three totals. So that's 2 weeks of release, right? This is the third weekend, and so it's been out 2 weeks. That's wild. It came out like the 13th. Yeah, it's been out 2 weeks. $400 million in 2 weeks.
And it has no means of stopping it. It's just going to keep getting more and more while everything else is kind of stagnated. Mm-hmm. And like, I think like you look at Planet of the Apes or Bad Boys or If, those numbers, like the 165, 150 million right around that part, mm-hmm. that's where those movies have been for like weeks now.
Well,
they've stagnated there.
Bad Boys still has a little bit of growth left in. I think Bad Boys will actually catch and pass Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. But it's a wild story. It made more in its second weekend than it was predicted to make in its opening weekend.
Which is this? Is this Inside Out or is this Bad Boys?
No. I'm talking about Inside Out. Inside Out made $100 million in its second weekend. And it was, you know, predicted to make, you know, 70 to 80 were the original predictions for its opening weekend. And it's just, it's why, I mean, we're not even talking about the worldwide gross, which is even grosser.
Yeah, you know, this is only domestic.
So, I it still remains to be seen what Deadpool versus Wolverine will do and what Despicable Me 4 will do. It is certainly possible they could have similar outcomes, but it is getting more and more likely that it's going to be hard to catch Inside Out, especially if it has another, a third, like killer weekend this weekend and finds itself at 500 million after 3 weeks. Like,
oh, it's going to cross half a billion for sure.
It's just like, can Deadpool versus Wolverine get to 500-600 million in 3 weeks? Yeah, it can, but that's a tough ask. So, yeah, this could be very, very interesting as we kind of head towards the rest of the summer. So, yeah. So
speaking of sitting pretty, though, look, yes, who's in number two spot.
Yeah, but it's still too early. Like, my fall guy,
take your wins where you can get them.
Sure. My fall guy points will drop quite a bit. My Furiosa points will drop quite a bit as other movies pass them and push them down. My Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes number will actually probably go up a little bit as Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes gets pushed down a little bit. My Garfield movie points will probably be about right. And then Twisters. Twisters is my other one that I need to see how it performs. But yeah, if Inside Out remains at number one, I do have a good shot. But I am currently in number two for the contest right now. So there you go. That's our look in at the Summer Sum Game and the amazingness that is the Inside Out box office. Well, you ready to get into the reviews, my friend?
Let's do it.
All right, let's kick it off with A Quiet Place, Day One. As New York City is invaded by alien creatures who hunt by sound, a woman named Sammy fights to survive. This is the third movie in the Quiet Place franchise, breaking the titles set by the first two, which were A Quiet Place and A Quiet Place 2. This is now just A Quiet Place Day 1. So this is not... I don't think Krasinski... I think he probably produced.
Yeah, right? He did.
Okay. So he produced this, but he's not directing. But you will see people you know in here, like Lupita Nyong'o as Sammy, as the center character. Jimon Hunsu, who's, you know, playing the same character from the second movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And Alex Wolff, who I've seen a lot of stuff. And performance by Joseph Quinn as well, who I wasn't as familiar with but wanted to mention. What did you think of A Quiet Place Day One as we go to New York when the aliens invaded? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I did not like it.
Did not like it. Very excited to hear about that. I am firmly in the liked it. And if I had to tip one way or the other, high side of liked it. I think this is a really good movie.
Awesome.
And I'll talk a little bit about why I think so. And what's interesting is I wonder if the same reasons I like this movie are the reasons some people won't. And what I mean when I say that is I don't think this needed to be a Quiet Place movie. I think this is actually a stronger movie if you remove it from the Quiet Place universe, or at least, you know, give us a little more, a little less of the you know, quote unquote necessary jump scares and alien stuff and that kind of thing. Because if this was done more like a 10 Cloverfield Lane, right, that's in like the Cloverfield universe, but isn't really a Cloverfield movie, you don't even really see the aliens till the end. Man, I think this is doing some really interesting stuff. And I think what I like about it the most is probably the things this movie is dealing with, processing, talking about in the realm of dignity, the idea of dying with dignity, the idea of what it means to understand death as a natural part of life. There's some really impressive work it does with the Sammy character on helping us understand, you know, the ideas of where is joy found even in the dying process, right? And I don't think it's a spoiler really to say that our main character, right from the beginning, we know has a terminal illness, is dealing with a terminal illness. And I really think the movie does a good job exploring that and weaving that in to this this alien attack in a way that goes, okay, here's what dying with dignity looks like. Here's what it feels like. Here's the idea of what it means to leave behind joy, to experience joy. And the other thing is, Lupita Nyong'o is just so good. Like, she's just such a great actor, and I really enjoyed her. I really enjoyed Joseph Quinn in this as well, and but this is Lupita's movie. She carries it, and I think she's really, really amazing in it. I don't think the movie's perfect. I certainly have some negatives that we'll talk about, but what did you have, Andrew, that you want to talk about?
Well, since we're already talking about Lupita Nyong'o, let's just go ahead and keep talking about the acting in this movie, because I think the acting in this film is really good, especially our two main protagonists. Joseph Quinn is showing the most emotional range in this film, believe it or not. I know you're probably going to disagree with that, but I think the way he struggles to be brave in terrifying situations while these hordes of monsters are hunting them is just a testament to his acting abilities. Now, that's not to say that Lupita Nyong'o isn't on his level, far from it. She's just showing a different type of emotion in this movie. And I think if you were to cast somebody in a Quiet Place movie, it's because you know that they know how to express emotion without having a lot of dialogue. And most of our leads succeed in that, which is very difficult to do. If you can show emotion without words, because words, noise, that's how we convey things to one another.
Right.
So if you can strip yourself of that and just go based solely off of physical emotion, like emotional expression and stuff like that, then that shows that you are a very good actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another big pro I have is this franchise, I think, does tension as good as any of the top horror franchises out there. The way that our Sarnowski, this is a Sarnowski film, by the way. He did a Pig, which I'm a very big fan of. He wrote and directed this movie as well. But the way he understood the part of the assignment of, you know, doing tension and horror really good, I was worried for a minute that this film was going to be nothing but unbridled anarchy for 2 hours, but it wasn't. Sure, that this it's in this movie, but I felt here that parts of the film that scared me the most were the silent, filled, tense moments. And that is what made the first two films so great, is silence that makes the audience afraid to make a noise themselves. And now we throw in a completely different environment into the mix, one that is just inundated with noise. New York City is one of the loudest cities in the world. And they even talk about that in a little bit of a text dialogue at the beginning of the movie. These are moments that where after you just want to be quiet again, or after the initial attack. Here's a good example. After the initial attack, there are these helicopters that are flying overhead with loudspeakers telling everybody, stay quiet, stay quiet. And then shortly after the helicopters go by, then this swarm of monsters would go chasing after it, and then it would be quiet again. I think the film knows when to be loud and scary, and it knows when to be silent and scary.
It does a good job, and I think, again, a lot of this credit is due to the conceit of the franchise. You know, the idea that you have to be silent because these aliens have, you know, super hearing or whatever. And so that plays really, really well into the tension that these movies are doing. And I agree that this movie carries on that tension really, really well. And I think there is something about these movies that just feels like an experience. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, the conceit and the quietness and the way that that is looked at on screen. Does it always make sense? Not to me. There are many, many times where, In fact, we can, you know, brush into negatives whenever we want, but, you know, it is one of those things with me where I watch a movie like this and I have to continually just calm my brain when it's like, that doesn't make sense to me. That doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand why this noise is, you know, can be heard from four blocks away and, you know, this alien is standing right here and can't hear breathing or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I have to quit thinking about those things to just enjoy what's going on. And in fact, it's also kind of one of those things. I would put this in the category of one of my big negatives. There's a John Wickification of this where the more movies they make in this universe, the less I'm interested in the universe. The more they explain, the more I get annoyed by. And it's a really interesting thing that happens with me that I think I just like it when it's subtle and unexplained and, you know, a little more, you know, the first one where I don't know what's going on. I don't know what these creatures are. I don't know where they came from. I don't know, you know, how this works. And the more it gets explained, the more I go, yeah, but that doesn't make sense. Yeah, but that doesn't make sense. So, yeah.
I heard people saying as I was leaving the theater that they wanted to know more about these creatures. They wanted to know their motivations and their physiology and all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the opposite camp. I'm with you. I feel not knowing about them adds to the tension. As we all know, understanding something is to no longer fear it.
Right.
So, but I do disagree with you in the sense that these movies, as they come out, we learn more and more about, you know, this world. I don't think, and maybe you could tell me if it's not spoilerish, what we've learned in this movie that we didn't already know about these creatures or this world from the first two movies.
I guess we learned some of this in the second movie, and maybe I'm just talking about the continued transition from the idea of the first movie to these movies. But when you're just dealing with one or two of these creatures at a time, it's different than the movie showing us how they act as a herd, how they act on, you know, arrival day. It just raises questions that none of us have interest in answering because there isn't really an answer. And so it's distracting to me to, you know, try to process, you know, some of these things. So, And I actually think it has something to do with the more you show them, the more you get into here's how they attacked, here's what happened, the more you're going to ask questions of like, who are these guys? What are they doing? And none of the answers are satisfying. Like there's no way to really, and I don't want them overexplained, but when you present them in a larger capacity, you're asking for those questions. And you know, so there is an element of you're asking me to think about these things because you're showing me so much of this attack and their, you know, what they are doing in New York is so much more vivid and clear than the other movies that I come away with some distracting thoughts and questions about
nice.
Who are these guys? How do they communicate? What are they, you know?
So it's not that we're getting more answers, it's that we're getting more questions.
It's that the more you shine light on something, the more you start to see the cracks and the flaws that might be answered in those questions. Okay. And so, yeah, psychologically, it's just a different process for me, you know, once we start to, you know, dig in. And if you're not going to really dig in and give us some answers, that's fine. But yeah, it feels different than the first one for me. And again, I felt the same way about John Wick. The first one's still the only one that I love, love, love. The others are fine. And they do, you know, I mean, my opinions on the Wick series, you know, are not unknown. But it's the same kind of idea. It's like the more we get into the high table and that kind of stuff, it's just like, yeah, but I don't know. But then this doesn't make sense. Like, it's just, I don't know. I kind of prefer a little bit of a simpler thing going on, especially when you're dealing with such a simple story like this. The actual heart of this story is very, very simple. And that's what I mean when I almost don't need the quiet placeness of it all. like the big action-y Quiet Place of, you know, of it all, with a bunch of alien creatures and a bunch of big set pieces, you know, I'd love for that to exist around it just as this terrifying thing. And I think that would have worked better for me, but you know, it isn't about me.
Well, you're the audience and you have a voice, so that's it true. Is about you in a way.
What about you? What are some of your big negatives?
This is where you and I are going to diverge. And I think whenever you said that you were talking about the things you loved about this movie that other people won't, maybe this is the big one. And it's, I could not understand what this movie was trying to say. Mm-hmm. You said it was about the meaning of life and how precious life can be and what a good death can mean and stuff like that.
The last part more than the first two. Okay. In part of this, I'll just jump in and say, my wife is a nurse. She works in the comfort care section of oncology. So when somebody is dying of cancer, oftentimes they need people to take care of them. And so many of her patients come to them to die. You know, they are there to receive comfort and care while they are passing. And I think because we are all so scared of death, death is the big unknown. We are, I shouldn't say all, you know, I'm not trying to speak for everybody. I'm just saying as human beings, we are often scared of death and we don't, and in denial about it, you know, and we have to be to some degree to live our lives day to day, be in denial about, you know, the idea that we will just be gone at some point. But this movie very purposely not only sets its central character as somebody who is, you know, trying to make peace with that or trying to understand that, it also crafts its action plot around that idea. And I don't want to spoil, you know, things that happen towards the end of the movie, but there is definitely an idea that the movie is getting into here about what it means to die with dignity, what it means to understand that, you know, death is not to be avoided, because you can't. Ultimately, but to be understood and to be processed. And so, it's really the Sammy character is really interesting to me because of that. So I hope that helps broaden my understanding of what I think the movie is doing.
It does. But at the same time, I'm still on the fence with it, because I think, without getting into spoilers, I just wanted more from this character. And I know it is hard to get more about a character that can't talk for fear of being eaten. Mm. But I look at the first two Quiet Place films and they did an amazing job of fully realizing characters without dialogue. I think here in this film that is more interested in tension than character development.
Yeah, that's not the movie I saw. I don't know. I almost feel like this character is more developed than the first movies. Characters were. I feel like we get so much of who this person is and where they come from and, you know, what their world is. I don't know. I felt very connected to Sammy and very connected to her journey, you know, trying to figure out and make peace with her past, present, and future. But yeah, I think there's a beautiful scene in a pizzeria that I thought was
cards.
Mm-hmm. I thought was really, really a really fun way to explore the ideas of community in trauma.
Yeah, that's my favorite scene in the movie too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really just good. Beautifully done. It's where we get the most character development from. I almost called him Eddie because that's his character name in Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah, that's who that is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's Eddie from Stranger Things. He's also going to be Johnny Storm in the Fantastic Four.
Oh, is it really? Is that confirmed? Yeah, that's cool. All right.
So we're going to be seeing a lot more of him. But nice. Joseph Quinn, I think that's where we get the most character development out of him, is in that pizzeria with the cards and stuff.
You think that scene's about him?
I think that scene's about them.
Yeah.
Not him.
So. Yes, I think so too.
Yeah. I'm going to contradict something I said earlier about not being just unbridled anarchy for 2 hours.
Wouldn't be an episode of Sif Pop if one of us didn't contradict something we already said.
Especially me. I was not satisfied with the initial invasion sequence in this movie. I was looking forward to seeing people figure out that you have to be quiet in order to survive.
Yep.
But that moment was so fleeting that I didn't get to appreciate what the actual chaos of the situation must have looked like.
Yeah.
The film very quickly goes back to some formula of silence build tensions, which works. Don't get me wrong. I think that the quiet moments in the Quiet Place franchise is where this shines. But at the same time, I was hoping that with this being day one, I would see some new ground being broken. But there is nothing in this film that you can't get from the first two other films.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, this was going to be my one last thing, by the way, which is that there is a Fear of the Walking Dead, or whatever, the Fear of the Walking Dead, or whatever that show is, problem that happens in these kind of movies, where it's like, ooh, let's see how it started. And the movie's like, well, actually, I'm not interested in technically how it started. I'm just going to show you the same stuff, you know, when it was starting. I'm not interested in the details of how it started. I'm more interested in just showing you what was happening when it started. And it's like, okay, in Fear of the Walking Dead is the worst example of this. Within three episodes, it's just another Walking Dead show. There's
exactly
nothing that sets it apart from, you know, The Walking Dead within just a couple episodes. I had the same feeling as you, where it was like, oh, I thought we were going to discover how humans, you know, figured this stuff out.
Yeah.
And I think what the movie wants us to believe is that, and I'm not sure I disagree, is that this is not hard to figure out. That this is instinctive almost. The idea of being quiet and hiding is already an instinct, right? And so the idea that the people who are dying are the people who are making noise, and the people who are living are the ones being quiet, is probably just something people figured out pretty quick. I think that's what the movie is, you know, wanting us to believe, is that there's not much mystery here. This is just, you know, a pretty obvious thing that people would have figured out really, really fast. But it does still feel like there's some steps missing.
Yeah.
So
I think if we're going to be talking about The Walking Dead and Fear of the Walking Dead, I think a good example just on the same zombie train would be, I think World War Z did a really good job of, you know, a day one, you know, panic.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of what I was looking for here. Yeah. And I didn't get it. And that's on me for having, you know, expectations about how a film is supposed to tell its story.
Yeah. Let's do one last thing if you have one. And I've got another one I can talk about, because there was another thought I had while watching this, which was, I appreciated some of the things the movie did to give a sense of the scale of humanity that lives on Manhattan Island, right? Like the idea that there are millions of people on this tiny little island. And there are some things that the movie does to go, you know, how do you keep millions of people quiet? How do you get millions of people safe? You know, those kind of things that I thought were really interesting. The other side of that, though, again, my distracting brain, is there is not nearly enough blood, viscera, and dead bodies around for this to make any kind of sense. Like,
it's got to be PG-13, brother.
I know it does. But when you're like, when you go to the pains of showing how massive the humanity is on this island, you can't just then have a giant attack and then look at the streets and it's like, oh, look, blood puddles every, you know, 20 feet. Like, it's just, yeah. It's anyway. I mean, who knows? Maybe these creatures, like, you know, eat all of the buffalo. I don't know. Like, you know, they lick the blood out of the streets. I have no idea. But it just was one of those things, like, I know you can't show it, and I'm not asking you to, but my distracted brain is going, this should just be 3 feet of human meat, you know, yeah. In every road. But yeah. So, in fact, a great title for the movie, 3 feet of human meat. You can take that for the next Quiet Place movie if you want. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
Real quick, before I do my one last thing, I found the ending of this film to be unsatisfactory, but I can't go into it without getting into spoilers. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Ending of this movie locked in the themes for me in a really big way, so I really like the ending.
Nice. My one last thing besides no post-credit scene is I like what the movie did. They named the cat Frodo and our main character's name is Sam.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and they're constantly walking.
That's beautiful. I didn't even think about that. That's a great, I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
What do you think about the cat? The quietest cat in the history of cats.
In the history of cats. I hate cats. So let's just be clear right away. But I felt like the way this movie understands support animals was really interesting and kind of beautiful. So I actually dug what it was doing with that. Again, playing into the theme of, you know, comfort and support as you experience trauma. But yeah, I dug the cat. I thought it works with this movie.
Yeah. There were scenes where I found it to be, you know, annoying. Like there's I don't know if I can say this without it being spoiler, but I'm going to go ahead and say it. There's a scene where one of the characters has to go and find the cat, and it's mainly that entire scene is just for tension. Mm. It doesn't add anything to the rest of the story, you know?
Right.
So I felt like the cat was like a crutch for storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of the scenes with the cat being a crutch for storytelling, again, don't make sense. There are actions characters take that involve this cat that are so dumb and don't make any sense to me. But anyways.
Yeah, that's my one last thing.
There you go. That is A Quiet Place Day One. It is in theaters. I think it's a good one to see in theaters. These Quiet Place movies always work well in a crowd, I think, and I enjoy the atmosphere. But Andrew didn't like it, so he probably doesn't want you to see it at all.
You know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, maybe I didn't like it as a little strong. Maybe the low side of okay.
Okay.
Teetering into didn't like it.
All right. Fair enough. Let's move on to our next review. Let's talk about Horizon, an America saga. America saga? Nope. Horizon, an American saga, chapter one.
You and I are standing guard in one of the last great open spaces.
That looks like a promising place.
The place I might be able to see myself. You just have to stand at the river, and you can see what the men and the women up there see. That's what drove us across the ocean to this country in the first place. Hope.
Explore the lure of the Old West and how it was won and lost through the blood, sweat, and tears of many. Spanning the 4 years of the Civil War between 1861 and 1865, embark on an emotional journey across a country at war with itself, experienced through the lens of families, friends, and foes, all attempting to discover what it truly means to be the United States of America. This is Kevin Costner's baby, and he wants to put his baby in front of all of us, doing two of these movies this year. And then I think he said he has two more to come. So this is chapter one of an eventual four chapters, I think he's going for.
Yes. Four.
For this. So you will see plenty of people in here that you might know, but I'm just going to mention a couple. Sam Worthington, I think, is worth throwing out there. Luke Wilson, somebody you'll probably be interested to see. And, of course, Kevin Costner. Showing up in there as well. What did you think, Andrew? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
Now, this one I did like.
Nice. Liked it.
Yes.
If feelings are determined by how you feel about a movie when you walk out of the theater, I hated this movie. If feelings are determined by how you felt the majority of the film, I liked it. I liked it. A simple I liked it. So we'll unpack that a little bit, and I will if anybody's keeping the SifPop wiki, you can officially put me in the low side of liked it category if you need to do that. But we'll unpack it. But first, Andrew, some thoughts on Horizon American Saga Chapter 1.
I know that this film is simply setting up what is to come, and that makes it difficult to appreciate, especially when trying to review what basically boils down to a 3-hour pilot for a TV show. But there are already several story arcs that I'm invested in. And that is what I like about this film. If you don't like one storyline, well, there are 6 more that you can choose from. And it makes me interested in seeing how all these totally unique and exciting storylines are going to converge. But I could see that being a detriment for some people. Mm. Some people will want more cohesive and linear, not linear, but easier to follow storyline.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot to say about all of that. And I think it is probably the primary discussion people will have about, at least I believe, the primary discussion people will have about this movie, especially if you walked into it not knowing, you know, that it was a 4-parter. Now, unlike Dune, this has been clear all along. If you're willing to do even the you know, the least bit of research, you knew that this was a chapter
literally 1. Literally called chapter 1.
It's called chapter 1. It has been on the posters. It has been in the promotions. Like, you know, this isn't a sit down in the theater and it says Dune part 1 at the beginning. You're like, part 1? Like, yeah. You know, it's not that. You know, that didn't. Being a part 1 only annoyed me in the usual ways, and we'll get into that more as we eventually get to the discussion of this movie as a chapter of a whole and how it ends. However, I think the epic filmmaking that's going on here is a real beautiful attempt to capture something that not a lot of movie makers are trying to capture in this way. And I think I see what Costner is trying to do here. He's trying to bring a sense of scale to this movie that a lot of movies haven't. You know, it's interesting that we are dealing with a Western to do this, because a lot of the old epics are Westerns. And so it really fits that category. You know, the epics, the primary classic epics fall into two categories, which are Westerns or, swords and sandals, right? Those were kind of the two, yeah. the two big, or Bible times or whatever, you know, want to call them. You know, this is definitely in that mold. Does it completely work as well as those movies? I'm not sure it does. And I think part of that is our modern understanding of how television has taken this role. So, and you already mentioned the, you know, being a pilot of a TV show aspect of this. It is hard to shake that feeling that you're watching a TV show. It really is. I think I didn't realize until watching this movie exactly how much television had taken the mantle of telling epic serialized stories. And because television was not just a place for sitcoms. There were certainly dramas on television for a long time, but for most of television's history, they were dramas that were, you know, week to week, you know, case of the week, you know, whatever, like ER or, you know, MASH. Hill Street Blues or MASH. They had the same characters, and there were some overarching character arcs that were happening in the show, sure, but it was mainly about those characters doing a different thing each week, right? And it's only been in the last, you know, Soprano number of years that we've kind of really seen TV go to epic all around serialized storytelling and become kind of the outlet for that, because the movies kind of abandoned it. And so to take it back to the big screen like this, I get what Costner's doing. And I like it. I like it, but it's just so hard to shake that feeling that you're watching a TV show and not a movie. Yeah, I think that's kind of a give and take of this epic storytelling to a modern audience, is that it asks different things of you than you might be used to going to the movies. So, but I liked that, and I liked the bigness of it. I like all the stories. I like how, you can feel the patience that Costner is having in setting up and telling this story. The way this movie begins in a real way is saying, I'm not giving short shrift to any part of this story. Like, I am willing to really spend my time helping you understand the expanse of what's going on here. And it trusts the audiences to put some things together, which I love. And doesn't spoon. I don't think this movie spoon feeds the audience much, which I really appreciate. And the other thing I will mention while I'm spending time kind of loving on this movie again, because I did like it until I didn't, is is that the movie is also bold in a way that TV has taken from movies. What I mean by that is this movie goes some places that I just a lot of producers and studio execs would not usually let happen in a movie. I'll just, like, you know, there are deaths of children in this movie, and you're just not, you know, we've kind of shied away because of, you know, how triggering and traumatizing that stuff can be, you know, from putting that stuff in movies. And this movie is like, yeah, but this is real. This is what happened. It also feels like it's willing to be bold about the relationship between the settlers and the indigenous tribes, and to go, you know, as much as possible, take an overall view of giving real respect and credence to every human being who experienced that and what they were experiencing. Because we can talk about overall thoughts on colonization and the idea of taking someone's land and all those things, and they're valuable, valuable things to talk about, the ethics and morality of those things and how they relate to time periods and what was going on and all that stuff. But this movie isn't as interested in really having those political conversations as much as is interested in going, let's look at the human beings who were involved in those moments and how those conflicts would have shaped their opinions, their views, their understanding of the world around them. And I think that's really bold and interesting. So I loved all of that about this movie.
Totally. 100% agree with you on that. And talking about the bigness and the grandness of this movie, the scenery in this film, like, plural, is gorgeous.
Mm.
Miles upon miles of untamed land that are just breathtaking. And through the lens of our protagonist, we get to see the biodiversity of this country, each more beautiful and dangerous than the last. But these stunning visuals are not simply backdrops to be appreciated with the eyes. The backdrops are integral elements that enrich the storytelling, too, reflecting the untamed spirit of the West. I just think the cinematography masterfully captures the grandeur of, like, towering mountain ranges or expansive plains and untouched forests. You know, the careful attention to detail in these scenes immerses the audience in the era that this film takes place, making it feel as though we're exploring these wild terrains alongside the characters. That's going to kind of transition me into my big negative for the movie, if you don't mind me getting into the negative already. Well, I think Horizon Zero, or Horizon Zero Dawn, Horizon American Saga excels in its visual presentation. I think it kind of falters significantly in terms of tempo and pacing. The film's narrative kind of unfolds at this excruciatingly slow pace, which we did talk about. Costner is not spoon-feeding anybody anything. He is living in these moments.
Mm-hmm.
But it often causes the storyline to feel stagnant and drawn out. It's this sluggish progression that can particularly frustrate its audience. I think it detracts from the otherwise compelling plot and the rich historical context that the film seeks to explore. Even the uneven pacing kind of disrupts the film's rhythm a bit in my eyes.
I can definitely see that experience happening for a lot of people. It wasn't the experience I had, and I think I kind of knew what I was getting into. I think I prepared myself for a very slow, patient, epic style storytelling.
That's 3 hours. Yeah.
So I think I was prepped enough that it didn't really bother me too much. And I felt like, I don't remember ever watching a scene and going, oh, I'm bored. What are we doing here? I remember feeling like every scene was valuable to a character, because again, there were so many stories and so many characters. So, you know, there's a lot of building out to do. This movie has some really incredible set pieces, but you know, those set pieces all involve completely different groups of people that in order for us to really feel the tension of those set pieces and of that, what's going on, we have to build up a connection to all the people, you know, or to some, at least some people involved in those situation, in those set pieces. And so, you know, this movie spends time, and again, I'm trying to explain why I would possibly put what you're talking about in my pro category, not my con category, because the movie spends the time developing characters that go away pretty quickly. But the movie's like, it's okay. They're, you know, just because they're only going to be with us for the first half hour of this movie, they deserve, you know, the full spectrum of understanding, so that when they go away, however they go away, whether they just disappear or they die or whatever, that, you know, we feel something about that. We feel some sort of way about that. Some of those characters are left open-ended. We don't know if they're actually dead or gone or we're going to see them again or whatever. And others we are more certain about. And I don't know. I really like that. I really liked it, Andrew. I really liked how much patience this movie had to really spend time with the humans that are in it.
I don't think that any scene wasn't necessary. I want to clarify that. Okay. I think that every scene was necessary, but I think that we were staying in moments too long sometimes. Like, maybe this is another way of saying it, and maybe you could understand this. Tempo and pacing aside, another issue I had was I don't think that the movie transitioned from one set piece to the next fluidly enough. Mm. I found it very jarring going from one to another and not seeing a through line from one scene to another on like why we're cutting away now to this scene. Like you'll see in a lot of movies, for example, where sometimes, you know, an example would be a protagonist would be talking about something and then the next scene it would cut to would be maybe an antagonist also talking about the same thing. You would see a through line to the next scene. I didn't really see any through lines or connective tissue from one scene to the next. It was always, honestly, I don't know if these set pieces and these different storylines that we're seeing, I don't know if they take place at the same time. Like these could, you know, take place years after each other, or they could all take place.
I don't think so.
But there was also,
I mean, if you're asking me if there's proof that they take place at the same time, I don't think there's proof, but I think it could be pretty easily inferred that this is all happening around the same time.
I just don't know, because the movie's not really clear. We go from, you know, expansive mountain ranges to the desert. Maybe it's just really jarring in my mind.
I want to say I totally agree with this. And even though that's not the experience I had, I think you are speaking to something that is an experience that a lot of people will have, which is, and part of the reason I say this movie doesn't spoon feed the audience, right? Like part of the reason is it's not always going 5 years ago. It's not putting text up on the screen to give you that easy way of connecting to, you know, later that day, you know, this is the same person, you know, or whatever, you know, we might have to infer ourselves. I kind of liked that, but there is an element of construction maybe that could have been better. So you don't have to like spell it out, but maybe there's a way to edit this together a little more cohesively so that we feel the process of these stories in a better way. I just think he's got there's too much on the plate. It's like one of those things where you're at Thanksgiving dinner and there's all these different foods and you only have one plate and you're the kind of person that doesn't like your food to touch. And it's just like, sorry, It's good. Like your mashed potatoes are going to go into your peas. Like that's just going to happen. There's nothing you can do about it. And I think Costner has a Thanksgiving buffet of characters, and they're just going to get a little muddled and confused because there's so much to do. He like, I don't know how you do what he's trying to do and make it clear, but maybe that's why I'm not a movie editor. You know what I mean? Like there should be people who do understand structure in that way and maybe can do that better. Cause I think you're right. That could be a barrier to entry and be confusing.
Yeah. Another negative I have for this film is, or not a negative, I'm sorry. A positive I have for this film is I think that it does a very good job of expressing just how hard life was at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And not just like physically hard, but also the emotional toll it had to take on people, you know, just the grueling way of life and, you know, dangers around every corner, you know, we're seeing this not solely from the perspective of the white man, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're getting storylines, you know, from the indigenous people of America. We're getting storylines from people who have immigrated to this country. You know, we're getting all these different story arcs. And I just think that it's fascinating how all of these stories are eventually going to converge. And I'm just fascinated to see how it happens.
Mm-hmm. Now, I agree.
Not every epic saga has to be Lord of the Rings. I'm not saying that, but what I am saying is I think Lord of the Rings did it best, where each movie is like a part one, part two, part three, but each movie in itself is a completed, finished movie. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at you, Dune. I'm looking at you, all these movies that just are Across the Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm looking at all these movies, and now I'm looking at you, Horizon. You can't just end a movie and expect people to be like, okay, well, we'll just get everything picked up in the next film. It reminds me of a patch for a video game. You know, like you'll get the DLC later on, you know. And that's kind of what it's reminding me of, this new trend of, well, you'll get the completed story in the next movie.
Yeah. It's the worst, Andrew. I hate it. It's a thing that's just happening in more and more movies, and it's just like, is this what we're dealing with now? You can make multi-part stories and still make complete films. You can do it. I promise. It takes a little bit of effort to have some sort of through line where you have a setup, a climax, and a resolution of one of the characters in some way. That's all it takes. That's it. Just,
yeah.
Why movies should never feel like to be continued.
Yeah.
Like when
that's a TV show.
That's a TV show thing. That is we're going to show you next week how this story revolves. Now, resolves. Now, I was prepared, like I said, for a chapter one. I knew that going in. I appreciate that. Props for making that very, very clear. And props for part two being, what, 6 weeks from now?
August 12th, I think. It's in August.
So a couple, less than a couple months. Yeah, like 6 weeks, right?
Yeah.
So I love that. If you're going to do this, I love that. I love that's the way to do it. Props on those things. But you still can make a complete movie. You can, all things can be true. We've known for so long that the merging of the ideas of television and movies both way, you know, it's just going, you know, both ways. And it's harder and harder to understand how content is different on either of those platforms at home or at the theater.
Lines for sure.
And I'm not trying to old man yells at clouds about that. I'm fine with things changing and evolving and, you know, things feeling like television. However, the one difference that I do want to yell at the clouds as an old man about is movies should be a complete story. They just should, when you go out to the theater, it should teach you something, tell you something, entertain you in a certain way, and have a story that that gives you something to walk out and be interested in or talk about or feel resolved on. And I think one of the greatest examples of a part one, if I may, and I know there are many opinions on this movie, is Dead Reckoning. I think Dead Reckoning was a great part one. And the reason is it set up all sorts of questions we're going to answer in part two. All sorts of questions. But there was a goal, a plan, and a resolution to that goal that sets that movie as a complete story. And when you walk out of Dead Reckoning Part 1, you feel like you saw a movie. You don't feel like you saw the first episode of a TV show and it went gun, gun, gun to be continued. Now, to make things worse, and the reason I walked out hating, this movie for at least 20 minutes, I was fuming about this, is that it does a this season on Horizon at the end.
You watched a trailer, Aaron. You didn't even know you watched a trailer.
Do you understand how frustrating that is? Because not only does it do a this season on Horizon, it does it in a way where it's some sort of montage at the end of this movie. What kind of nonsense is this? Like, how does this make sense in any kind of narrative fashion? How do you put marketing inside the runtime of your movie? This is dumb.
It is very dumb.
This is silliness. Stop this. Don't ever do this again. I was so furious. And it's not just because, oh no, I saw a trailer. I saw stuff from the next movie. It's not that. I promise you, it's not that. It's that that doesn't make sense as a narrative storytelling device. If this is a part one of a part two, you should be able to watch those movies flow into each other in some sort of way. If you watch Fellowship of the Ring, and then you watch Two Towers, and then you watch Return of the King, you can cut out the credits and just let them flow into each other and make sense. How do you flow into the next movie from a montage that includes scenes from the next movie? Or the next three movies? I don't know. Just a bunch of random scenes. You start the
next movie with a montage.
Of the previous movie, previously, on Horizon. It is hard for me to overstate how furious I was walking out of that theater. It was just anger.
Yeah.
How about you, Andrew?
No, I'm right there with you. I 100% agree. And as it was happening, first off, I was like, oh man, Aaron's going to hate this. I thought that during the movie. And then what that made me realize was this took me out of the movie.
Of course it does, because it's
not a movie anymore. It took me out of the movie because it made me think of things that were happening in the real world. Like, I was worried about you sitting behind me more than I was focused on what was. Well, but I'm serious. Like, I was thinking in that moment about you as opposed to wondering what was going on screen. And that should never happen. I should never, while watching a movie, be wondering what the rest of the audience is thinking about in the moment. I should be in the moment living it in this world, and I wasn't.
About 30, 40 seconds in, when I realized what's going on, I took my phone out and I started looking at my phone. Like, I just, you know, I was like, I don't need this. I don't want this. But it's, you know, and here's the other part of it. When you present it in that way, I know through overheard conversation, there was at least one person in our screening that thought that was the ending of the movie, that it was, and they just showed how things ended for everybody. They wanted to show that the story goes on and it just ended. And I was like that stuff was all clickbait. Like, everything they showed was like, oh, he's got a gun behind his back. Oh, who's he shooting at? Oh, what's that person is there? And it's just like everything, none of it made sense as any kind of resolution to story. So the way they are like leaving it up to the audience to interpret these visual images is just it's mind-blowing to me. I don't understand it. I would if I felt like I could do it without you get him punching me in the face, I would love to have a conversation with Costner about this choice and just understand if this was his choice or if the marketers told him he had to do something like this. Like, there's other ways to do this. Like,
yeah,
the best way is just have a resolution for your movie and say directed by Kevin Costner. That's the best way to do it. But like, if you can't figure out a resolution, because by the way, you take out that montage, what a weird dead end place to end the movie. I mean, just a terrible place to end the movie. Like,
the montage just starts. Like, there's no rhyme or reason as to it. That montage could have been anywhere in the movie and it would have made just as much sense.
And if you want to avoid it, there is a set. You'll know you're coming to about your 3 hours, and there's a set piece that involves a fight. And at the end of the fight, somebody's like, "Hey kid, come on." Like, I think that's the last line. Like, "Hey kid, come on." Everything after that is the montage. So if you want to get out of there, get out of there. Like, but it's a weird, it's so lazy. I hate it. It's so lazy. Form a complete story, or just have the guts just to cut to black and go, you know, to be continued, directed by Kevin Costner. Like, you know,
you would have preferred that over a trailer.
Oh, of course. It is a to be continued. Just admit it. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Anyhow. So, all right. I'm getting worked up about that. What, anything else you want to, chat about with, Horizon?
I haven't mentioned performances, but I don't think there's a single bad performance in the movie. Nobody stands out to me as like, oh, this is going to be the... Mm-mm. And here's the thing, too. This is probably what Costner is wanting for awards contention. This is his awards contention movie. If not this one, then Horizon Chapter 2 is.
I still think they're going to combine them somehow and make it a six-hour movie. But
a six-hour movie, my God.
And they'll just play it in New York and L.A., and then it'll qualify. You know, then qualify for Oscars as just, you know, Horizon and American Saga.
But. Yeah. But going back to performances, I don't think anybody is giving a performance that made me go, ooh, this is going to be one to remember for awards contention. Like, and that's not a diss on anybody, because everybody did their role to what was required of them. But nobody went above and beyond is what I'm trying to say.
I agree. And in fact, I would go a little bit further. I think the reason I haven't talked about performances is because I think they're all just fine. I think I don't think anybody is excellent in this. I don't think anybody's terrible. I think Michael Rooker is weirdly miscast in this. And I was trying to figure out his what was throwing me off about his performance, but I don't think he's that great in this. I think some people are a little over the top. There's a brother character played by Jamie Campbell Bauer that I was like, well, that's a bit much, buddy. Like, you know, dial it back. But, you know, Costner may be going for that more old school, you know, over the top acting style. But Luke Wilson is fine. Sienna Miller is fine. Abby Lee is fine. Sam Worthington's fine. Jenna Malone is fine. Like, everybody's, you know, I always love seeing Will Patton. So, you know, maybe that was great. Yeah. I always love seeing, what's his name? I can't remember. Jeff Fahey. Always enjoy seeing.
Oh, Fahey. Yeah. Yeah.
I always enjoy seeing Jeff Fahey. So I thought that was great. Danny Houston showing up in the role he did, I thought was good. And then I actually thought the best performances were probably performances from the indigenous actors. Owen Kroshu, I thought, was really, really great. Tatanka Means was really great, too. So, and those are characters that, you know, I know that I'll see more of because they showed up in the next time on Horizon montage. So we'll see more of them. That would be my one last thing is I think for the most part, the performances in this movie were just kind of, So yeah, I'm with you.
Yep.
All right. There you go. That is it for Horizon American Saga, Chapter 1, a movie I hated when I walked out of it, but actually kind of liked overall. So there you go. Before we head on to our best ever challenge, thank you to our SIFPOP members. Love you, appreciate you. You're amazing, you're awesome. Thanks for throwing a couple bucks a month our way to help us keep doing this thing. Really, really appreciate it. You can check it out at patreon.com/SIFPOP.
Prime Day is coming July 16th and 17th with epic deals exclusively for Prime members. You'll feel like you just won an award.
Oh, wow. I didn't even prepare a speech. I'd like to thank my family for always needing stuff. Also, Sam, my delivery guy, for bringing all my awesome deals so fast. You're the man, Sam!
Shop deals on electronics, home, and more this Prime Day, July 16th and 17th.
Just like backyard barbecues or a day at the pool, the Three Rivers Festival has always been a part of our summer fun. And the festival returns July 12th to the 20th. It kicks off with the annual Three Rivers Festival Parade. Browse art in the park with local artisans. Bring the family to Children's Fest. Stroll through Junk Food Alley. And don't forget about the festival concerts at the Hoosier Lottery stage with live music from nationally renowned acts. You can buy your concert tickets or check out a schedule of events at threeriversfestival.org. Don't miss the best summer experience in Fort Wayne, the Three Rivers Festival.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Best ever challenge, best ever one movies this week, Andrew. We'll go number five to number one. And of course, we have Trump rules.
Trump!
So, yeah, if you have it higher, just let me know. We'll trump it and we'll talk about it when it is at its highest. I'll kick it off with my number five, which is an animated Disney movie called 101 Dalmatians. I really dig this one. This is a really interesting, fun movie with one of the best villain performances in the history of animated films. I really enjoy it. So that is my number five. Andrew, what do you have at number five?
I'm going to go with Dune Part One.
Good choice.
Yes. Now, I did something different than you. I went with solely the number one, not like 101 or...
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, if that would be considered a stretch, but like, it's, you know...
I'm just telling you where my list is. I'm not judging your list by any means. I'm just saying this is where my headspace was.
Yeah, sure. Then I don't have a single movie that you will have.
Okay, perfect. Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised you wouldn't have my number one. Okay, we'll get there. Yeah, Dune. It's great. I need to make an apology right now, because I said that I loved Dune Part 2 whenever it came out. Mm-hmm. But that's not nearly as much as how much I love that movie. I really should have stated that I think it's one of the best sci-fi movies ever made. Mm. And I think that Dune Part 1 is just outstanding. I think that the way it starts off with the world building and it just creates everything is just so... fully realized. I absolutely love the Dune franchise, especially Dune Part 2, but Dune Part 1 is amazing as well.
Nice. Yeah, I think we took opposite exclusion. That's not a word I'm looking for. We picked opposite exclusion tactics. So I excluded anything that was like Part 1, Chapter 1, you know, like...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was just more like in the actual... I consider those things like... subtitles,
well,
I guess.
That was the only one I had. Oh,
okay.
That was a Part One.
Okay.
I mean, the rest of mine are like only the number one.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Move on to my number four, which has two ones in the title. In fact, my number five and my number four, both with two ones in the title. So I win. My number, I have a total of seven ones in my top five, is 1917. I really like this movie. This won Best Picture, didn't it? If I remember correctly, didn't this win? It didn't?
Nope.
Oh, it was going to, right? And then something else, upset it. Anyways, it's just an incredible film and, a lot of fun. And really, really interesting filmmaking going on in it. So, and it's one of the few war movies that feels to me like it's trying as hard as possible to be anti-war. And show the pointlessness of it all. So 1917 is my number four.
Very good.
What's your number four?
going with Star Wars Rogue One.
Good choice.
This is my second favorite Star Wars movie, or I mean third favorite, apologies.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love this movie. I think it makes A New Hope a better movie. I think that it, the character development is, I think, is it Cad, who's the Alan Tudyk character? Regardless, I think Alan Tudyk's robot character is amazing in this. I just wish I could remember its name right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the Grand Moff Tarkin stuff doesn't bother me as much as it bothered a lot of people. Like, I took it for what it was, and I moved on. But for a lot of people, that Uncanny Valley kind of just ruined part of the movie for them.
Yeah, I didn't have that. I didn't ruin the movie for me. I definitely noticed it. It didn't really ruin the movie for me, though. And I'm with you. I think this movie is phenomenal. Phenomenal. Is in my honorable mentions for sure.
Nice.
Yeah.
Number
Rogue One is great. My number three is 12 Monkeys. Is my number three. I recently watched the short that this is based on, La Jetée, and really interesting movie. It's just basically a PowerPoint presentation, but it's the story of the central foundational story of 12 Monkeys, of going back in time and all the things that happened to 12 Monkeys. I don't want to give them away. But anyways, I really think this is a great movie and has some really great story churns, some really great performances. Brad Pitt is amazing in it. If you haven't checked out 12 Monkeys, you should.
Yeah, it's the only time travel movie that... No, I shouldn't say it's the only one that makes sense, because I think Primer tries to go out of its way to make sense. As confusing as that movie is, it tries the best to be the most logical sense of time travel. But yeah, the idea of what has happened will always happen, you know, is a great way of doing time travel. And I think that Bruce Willis is great in it. Brad Pitt was nominated for an Oscar for this movie. It's really good.
Yep. What is your number three?
Gonna go with Godzilla Minus One.
Another good choice.
Just came out last year. My second favorite Godzilla movie ever, besides the very first one. This has the best character development out of any Godzilla movie ever. It's astounding what we see these people go through, how they were able to tie in 1945, like post-World War II, and, you know, devastation of not only losing World War II, but, you know, the metaphorical nuclear apocalypse that Japan went through. It's just a great movie, and I think the special effects in it... Well, I know the special effects in it are great, because it won an Oscar for Best Visual Effects.
And it should have.
It was so good.
I agree. Again, in my honorable mentions... just great stuff. I need to watch again. I've only seen it the once.
Only seen it like 9 times. I need to watch it again too.
Only 9. Yeah. I need to see it again. All right. My number two has been mentioned in this podcast already. My number two is 10 Cloverfield Lane. Comes in at my number two. For all the reasons we've spoken of before, I just think it's an incredible, you know, small cast story. It's really just the three of them, and they all give such great performances, and the tension is perfect, and Dan Trachtenberg is a great director. So Ten Cloverfield Lane is my number two.
This is true. Dan Trachtenberg definitely knows what to do.
Yep. What do you got at number two?
I am going to go with Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, also in my honorable mentions.
Now, this one did win Best Picture.
Yes, it did.
90% sure. Yes, it did. Yeah, Nurse Ratched, one of the greatest villains in cinema history. It's heartbreaking. You know, this Korean War veteran, and he's dealing with PTSD, and it's one of those movies I really don't know how to talk about, because it's such a sensitive subject matter that you want to make sure you talk about it right. But I'll just go ahead and say that the way it deals with mental institutions back in the 70s or in the 60s is it's heartbreaking. It really is just heartbreaking to see how we treated people and how we thought we were helping, but we were really doing so much more damage to them.
Yep. Yeah, it's a hard one to watch for sure. But really great movie making and pretty incredible stuff overall. On to number our ones. Number ones. 12 Angry Men is my number one movie with the number one in it. We've both talked about this movie a lot. It's pretty amazing. Yep. I think it's time for the 12 Angry People movie. So, yeah.
12 Angry Jurors.
There you go.
Yeah. You know how much I love this movie.
It's so good.
Yeah.
What do you got at your number one?
Surprised it wasn't on your list, but hey, it's your list. I'm going to go with One Night in Miami.
Oh, I totally forgot about One Night in Miami. Yeah, that would have been up there for sure. I just didn't cross my mind.
Yeah. Movie came out in 2020, I believe. It's the fictional story of Malcolm X, Cassius Clay, Jim Brown, and Sam Cooke having discussions in a hotel room about what it means to be African-American in the 60s. And it's powerful. This is a very powerful movie. I think that Regina King cements herself as a powerful director. Mm. I want to see so much more of her work. I think always thought she was, she just has it all. She's drop dead gorgeous. She can act, she can direct, she can write. What can't she do?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. That's a great choice. Either.
But speaking of writers, this written by Kent Powers, based on a stage play. Yeah, that guy is brilliant.
Yes, yes. The movie Soul would say the same thing. All right, honorable mentions.
I had one, the Swedish film, Let the Right One In.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that I've seen that. I think it seems a little scary to me.
It's about vampires. Yeah. No, it's actually a very sweet coming-of-age tale.
Oh, okay, I'll watch it then. I also had 127 Hours, which doesn't get talked about too much these days. I think that's a really tense...
Oh, that's the James Franco. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is a very good movie. That's
I just recently Boyle, saw a one-hour photo with Robin Williams, and just amazing.
Forgot about one-hour photo. That might have made my honorable mention.
Really, really impressive stuff. And then I had to mention the original Taking of Pelham 123. Which is just an incredible movie.
Yeah.
So there you go. Movies that have the number one in them for our best ever challenge. And we are to our buried treasure. Andrew, what's that one thing in any area of pop culture you want to make sure people know about?
It's a book, Aaron. Uh-oh. Yeah, it's a book.
Uh-oh, it's a book.
But there's a movie that just came out. I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know if the movie's any good. But the book is called The Watchers.
Okay.
This is about a young girl in Ireland who her car breaks down in the middle of the woods and she has to go try and find help. And while she's walking through the woods, she finds a cabin. It's a giant cement building. And on one side of the cement building is just thick glass. And as she's walking through the woods, it's starting to get dark. She sees some people are like, hurry, get inside. She gets inside and she finds out that there are monsters in the woods that are called the Watchers. And every night they come out from under the ground and they stand in front of the glass and they just watch you. And you can't leave because I guess the forest changes at night and you'll get lost in the forest. So it's these people trying to figure out how to, you know, try and get food during the day, how to plan an escape. It's very tense-filled. I really enjoyed it.
That's the Shyamalan.
Daughter of Shyamalan,
Yeah.
I want to give her an actual shout out because it's instead of just calling her Shyamalan's daughter.
No, I appreciate that.
It is Ishana Shyamalan.
And I haven't seen that movie either. But yeah, the book is called The Watchers. I'm gonna shout out for my buried treasure, a movie that I finally got around to seeing. That stars Edward Norton and Robert De Niro. Do you know the movie I'm talking about?
Edward Norton and Robert De Niro?
Mm-hmm.
Sure don't. Now that I'm thinking about it.
What if I threw in Marlon Brando?
Ah. This was whenever was this his first movie ever?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think his first movie was Primal Fear, if I could be wrong about that. What if I throw in Angela Bassett? Anyways, the movie is The Score from 2001. And yes, it's a movie with Edward Norton, Marlon Brando, and Robert De Niro, all doing some incredible acting. And it's a heist movie, and it's a really fun heist movie. There's nothing like spectacular about it structurally or story wise, but these people are all so good. And, you know,
Frank Oz.
Yeah. And Frank Oz directed it. I was going to get there. Yeah. Who I think has directed one of my other favorite movies of all time, which, of course, is Derek Delgadio's In and of Itself, was directed by Frank Oz. But anyway, this one I had a lot of fun with. And, you know, it's just there's something about really good actors just playing against each other that I just always find so captivating. And watching De Niro and Norton go toe to toe in this is really, really fun. So, yeah, check it out. It's a couple decades old, 2001, and it's called The Score. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. I really recommend it. You can find
Sold me.
You can find The Score on Paramount Plus, and you can find The Watchers if you can find a bookstore. You'd be able possibly to find
it's
it
there. Free on Audible. I'll say
or
that.
It's free on Audible. Why not? Why actually buy a physical copy when you can just have the digital version, right?
Yep.
Well, we did it, Andrew. We did a podcast. Congratulations to us. We both would have been killed many times over by the Quiet Place beasts.
You know how much my bones crack and creak. I would be dead 0.5 seconds. If I wasn't hit by one of their comets that, you know, crash into the world,
yeah,
I would be dead 0.5 seconds. Yes. Just by crack.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. Thank you so much for joining us today for SifPop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network if you want to search Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
And much love and gratitude to our SifPop members for giving monthly to make SifPop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month, and we appreciate you very, very much. You can check out all the fun and perks and all that kind of stuff at patreon.com/SifPop. A lot of ways to connect with the podcast. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. You can email us at feedback@SifPop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show, too. So let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than keeping your heartbeat from making a noise during a superpowered alien attack. We'll be back next week with some more fun stuff. It is the summer, and stuff just keeps coming out. So we'll talk about some more of it next week, and we'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Just like backyard barbecues or a day at the pool, the Three Rivers Festival has always been a part of our summer fun. And the festival returns July 12th to the 20th. It kicks off with the annual Three Rivers Festival Parade. Browse art in the park with local artisans. Bring the family to Children's Fest. Stroll through Junk Food Alley. And don't forget about the festival concerts at the Hoosier Lottery stage with live music from nationally renowned acts. You can buy your concert tickets or check out a schedule of events at threeriversfestival.org. Don't miss the best summer experience in Fort Wayne, the Three Rivers Festival.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.